Okay, let's go. Let's learn. So actually today we're starting a new section in the Tanya, Perek Lamed Hei, chapter 35. Goes for a few chapters and it essentially focuses a lot on the importance of mitzvahs, of action, and also during the course of these prakim, goes into the topic of Dira B'Tachtonim, the dwelling place for Hashem down here. Yeah, it's probably easier, if you don't mind. Like that chair. Yeah. Oh, yeah, whatever. Oh, that one. Yeah. Okay, that one's good. So, let's give a bit of a hakadoma, a bit of an introduction to this perek. Let's just summarize the whole Tanya from now till chapter 34. No, I'm just kidding.
Lisa could do it, actually.
That's good. So we know that the Tanya was based on the Pasuk, where Hashem, it's coming up soon, actually, in the Parsha, where Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, "Ki korev elecho hadover mo'ed." This thing, the Torah, is very easy, very not easy, but accessible, I suppose is the word to you. It's not overseas, it's not in heaven. So it's accessible to you, it's close to you. Beficho in your mouth, belovavcho in your heart. La soy soy, to do it, right? Now, so Tanya is based on that pasuk, and in different ways. So the first thing is, we know that Tanya, up until now, was explaining the difference between Beinoni and a tzaddik, or focused on being a Beinoni, which are all different types of things. And being a Beinoni really means a fundamental thing, and that is that we have, in our neshama, we have seichel and midas, we have intellect and emotion, right? Chochom in adas, and then chesed, gvura, and tol malchus, and so on. And then we have the three levushim. The three levushim are the three garments, right? The three garments are three ways we express ourselves, because seichel and midas, intellect and emotion, that's a raw material, and then we have to express it somehow, right? So how do we express it? In three ways: thought, speech, and action, right? And the fundamental part of the Tanya was, that explains, is that by a Beinoni, you actually don't get to fundamentally change the Nefesh HaBamis in terms of its seichel and midas, meaning that they will still have the struggle, they still have the temptation. So put it to give you an example, what this means, just to revise, right, to review a little bit what we've learned. So let's say a person has a temptation to eat something he shouldn't eat, or to get angry, or to be jealous, whatever the case is. So we know that initial thought is not in the control of a person. That initial impulse comes from the Nefesh HaBamis itself, right? Expressing it is a problem. Right, and therefore, we're not held accountable for the very initial thoughts, because the Beinoni is a person who still has a Nefesh HaBamis. Nefesh HaBamis, when he hears someone saying something he doesn't like, he will get angry, which means we'll activate in the raw material, the raw essence of the Neshama, will activate an impulse, which is, oh, I'm angry, right? Sustaining that, expressing it in Machshava, in thought, even in thought, or talking about it, or doing something about it, is forbidden. Right, that's controlling the three expressions, right? And that's the emphasis of la'asoysoy, to do. Now the Torah does say, ki korov eilecha, it is close to you, not only in action but also in your heart, which is interesting. Which means your heart, like your emotional structure, which means you could control it or it's close to you. So we know that's not what it means. It doesn't mean you can transform it. It means more that you need bilvavcha, you need to develop ahavas Hashem, love of Hashem, fear of Hashem, and so on, in order to make sure that your machshava, dibur, and maisi, your thought, speech, and action, is fully controlled, right? How do you develop the avas Hashem? This is the different parts of Tanya. The first part was actual emotional love. That comes from hisbodinus, really thinking about the greatness of Hashem. Not everyone could do that, so we went to the intellectual love, in other words, so that you at least can learn a lot and you can develop this attraction to Hashem, at least intellectually, which will also drive your decisions, and that's also part of it. And then not everyone can do that, so we went to a whole bunch of chapters about the Ahava Mesuteris, the hidden love, the essential chokhmah of the nefesh, the mesiras nefesh, whichever he does, you just have to reveal it, and you also have to understand that every mitzvah and every avera has to do with the fundamentals of belief in Hashem, because we all have the chokhmah in our nefesh, which would then motivate us to even give up our life if it came to that. The reason why we don't do it for every, if you like, with avodah zarah, we would do it, but we don't do it for every mitzvah is because we don't see it on the same level. But then he went into this whole discussion about the oneness of Hashem, And how every really thing that we do against Hashem is subtle avodah zarah, and every mitzvah we do is, and Torah we learn, is a connection to Hashem. So therefore, once we understand that, then we can make the connection between the hidden love that we have to everything that we do, right? I mean, easy to say in 5 minutes, obviously, to implement, but that's the concept. Then he went into the whole struggle, the chapters on sadness, chapters on simcha, the chapter on Avas Yisrael, and so on. Yeah, it's got it. Synopsis, okay. Now, the truth is like this. The truth is that it's interesting to understand. We're going to really delve into the relationship between Yiddishkeit and action, Maaseh B'Poel, doing mitzvahs, right? Because we have this idea that one of the purposes that we exist is to better ourselves, to improve ourselves, to refine ourselves, right? To become better people, not just to do mitzvahs, but also to refine us. Therefore, we would think that one of the ways to do that, to better ourselves, to refine ourselves, is Torah learning or davening, things that have to do more with thought and speech, right? Which is certainly true on one level, and yet what we're going to understand is that that's actually not true. The main way we do that is through action, through Maaseh B'Poel, right? And that's sort of what this parak is going to sort of introduce. Now, let's have a look. It's like everything in Tanya, it's not a quick paragraph. It's going to be a little bit of a journey. But let's see what we do. Okay. So he says like this, Perek Lamedei. V'hinei, the toisves biur tevas la'asoisoi. To add explanation, to add understanding to the word la'asoisoi, to do, right? Because the very fact that it's the last word in the pasuk says ki karov elecha, it is very accessible to you, beficha in your mouth, revavcha in your heart, la'asoisai, to do, seems like the punchline, like that's the tachlis, to do, right? By the way, this it's interesting. This concept governs everything in Yiddishkeit. Like it makes it incomparable and so dramatically different to every other religion. Right? That's the truth. Every religion is more not about action, it's more about spiritual connection, right? Other religions. Yeah, I mean, how many mitzvahs do the Catholics have? I mean, like, let me say.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, the Muslims have a few more because they're copied from us, but I mean, it's not like that's the. It's more of a prayer, I mean, it's all. Now, of course, Yiddishkeit is about tefillin, but it's a whole different perspective. In other words, the power of action. Okay, we'll see. Yeah, so that's just a joke. I mean, that's not anything to do with Yiddishkeit. I mean, obviously it has. Social justice is part of Yiddishkeit, but that's not. Yeah. I mean, once. No, I'll tell you a different problem. No, we have a different problem, which is really why this coming chapter is so important. We have a different problem that there's a Yiddishkeit developing by many people that has to do with God, but they talk about spirituality. Right? Spiritual. I'm very spiritual.
Yeah.
I have people that told me that they actually don't keep mitzvahs anymore. They used to keep more, they don't keep, but they never had a better relationship with Hashem. They have such a good relationship with God. They're very spiritual, right? I mean, the answer to that is that it's. I'm sure you do feel better, and maybe you do feel spiritual, but the relationship with Hashem is your Hashem that you've created, right? It's not. I mean, again, I'm not. It's no judgment. I'm just saying that is the truth according to Torah. The relationship with Hashem is only through mitzvahs, right? I mean. And spirituality is an important part of Yiddishkeit, but it's only a means to an end, really. It's actually not the goal of Yiddishkeit, being spiritual. The goal of Yiddishkeit is being godly. It's two different things. Being godly and being spiritual is two different things. Okay, we'll see. Okay, but let's go the way he's doing it now. All right, so therefore, to understand this thing, la'asoisei, to do, as it seems to be the goal, right? That's number one. That's the first thing you have to understand. Second thing you have to understand is v'gam lahovin ma'at mizeir tachlis bria sabenyanim. We have to really understand what's the purpose of the creation of the Beinoni. And what does that mean? What does he mean when he says the creation of the Beinoni? We have to understand v'yiridas nishmoiseim lo'olam hazeh. The neshama coming down to this world, lehislabesh, to be enclosed and to interact, b'nefesh habamis, in the animal soul, shema klipa v'sitra achra, which we know the animal soul comes from the klipa and the sitra achra. What's the point of all this? Ma'achar shelo yuchlu l'shalchom kol yameim. You'll never be able to drive away the nefesh habamis. U'litchoysa v'mekoyma, you'll never be able to push away the nefesh habamis or transform the nefesh habamis for shunat. Mechalal hasmoli shubalev, you'll never be able to drive it out from the left part of the brain, of the heart, as we know, that's the seat of the nefesh habamis. Shelo yalo mimenu hirurim alamar, you'll never be able to prevent it from sending signals, nefesh habamis signals, to the brain. Those initial thoughts, right? Why? Because as we know, ki mahusso ve'atzmusso shel nefesh habamis, because the essence of the nefesh habamis, which is the seichel and the midas, the intellect and the emotion, nefesh habamis shmei klipa, that comes from klipa, who betokfa ubigvirasa, is as strong as it always was. It has the same determination it always had. Eslam kitaldasa, as when it was born. Right? He never succeeds in really altering that, in changing that on the surface. V'imkein, and therefore, lomo ze yordu nishmoiseim lo'olam hazeh. So why did the neshamas come down to this world? Liga lorik, to work for nothing. Chas v'shalom. Lehi lochem kol yemeim ima yetz, just to fight the whole life with the yetzara. V'la yochel lo'in, knowing is never going to defeat it. What's the point of that? The whole time is about the war between the nefesh lekis and nefesh habamis, and it's a war you'll never win. Unless you're a tzaddik, with only very few tzaddikim. Right? Now the truth is, the truth is that actually we need to understand the Alter Rebbe's question here. Because the Alter Rebbe already answered the question previously in Tanya. And he said, In one of the chapters, where he talks about not being sad and all that, and one of the sources of sadness is when a person is upset in his level of avodas Hashem and is accept how come he still has temptation, right? And Alter Rebbe said that's actually an arrogant thought to have, because you want to be a tzaddik, you're not a tzaddik, you're a beinoni. And he said there that you have to understand the greatness of a beinoni. The greatness of a beinoni is that the war continues. Why is it so great? Because we know that the nachas, the simcha, the pleasure, so to speak, that Hashem has from a person overcoming a struggle in action, in other words, behaving even though you have a struggle, that's an amazing thing, right? And Chassidus says a lot on that, about the overcoming the struggle. First of all, there's something very, very special about having a struggle and overcoming it. That itself is a subjugation of the klipa and the sitra achra in the most amazing way. The Zohar says that kariskafi sitra achra, that when you subjugate, when you have iskafi, when you hold back the sitra achra, even a little bit, there's an amazing explosion of godliness in all the worlds, right? And other places also explains that just by having, it's what we call, the Chassidus is two terminologies. There's something called iskafia and ishapcha. Iskafia is subjugation, that's like what a beinoni has to do most of the time. And then ishapcha, which is transformation. Transformation is really only by tzaddik, where the nefesh habamis is actually transformed, right? It doesn't bother you anymore. But really, the most that the beinoni sort of can help is iskafia. It's not iskafia. It's just continuously holding it down, continuously saying no, right? It's like the kid who's always asking. You say no. You say, how many times do I have to say no, right? But that's it. The nefesh habamis is going to keep asking, going to keep trying, and you have to say no each time. Yeah, but that's very special. That idea of taking klipa and fighting the klipa is an amazing thing. Sometimes it explains. And in fact, it has to a certain degree, a greater degree of bittul than the tzaddik who's ishapcha. Why? Because at the end of the day, when the tzaddik transforms nefesh habamis and he serves Hashem, that's him. That's the tzaddik. His identity is kedusha, right? The beinoni has to do iskafia the whole time, right? But when he does iskafia, he's actually surrendering. He's saying, I'm going out of myself. Remember the conscious The conscious self of the nefesh of the bein is the nefesh habamis. So he's saying, I'm surrendering completely. The surrendering aspect of iskafia is so much greater than the natural existence of the tzaddik, because the tzaddik doesn't have the greatness of surrender. There's a, you know how Yom Yom is a little passage each day where the Rebbe made that calendar out in 1943. So one of the things it says there, it's all quotes from the previous Rebbe mainly. So he says that when Mashiach will come, we're gonna yearn for the Golas days. Can you believe it? Why should we use that's bizarre? What do you mean? I'm just bringing it in because it's like a timely thing there, right? I mean, what do you mean? We mourning the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. We 10 times a day we ask Hashem to bring the Beis Hamikdash and to bring back the Yerushalayim and then the whole thing, right? Like, what do you mean we're going to yearn for the Golas days? I mean, on the surface, no one's going to yearn for the Golas days. We're going to, right? But what is it? So what does he mean? He says, no, because there's a certain thing you can do now that you won't be able to do when Mashiach comes. Because Mashiach comes will be a mass transformation. There won't be any more fight. And we're going to yearn for that time where we're able to overcome the fight. Right? Have that bittul. So therefore, we have to ask, and that's what Alter Rebbe explains essentially in the earlier chapters. So why is he asking the question now again? Yeah. So the Rebbe explained that actually the Alter Rebbe answers it in the way he asks the question. The Alter Rebbe was very, very exact in the wording he uses in Tanya, right? Because like this, he uses the wording like this. So we have to understand the purpose of the Beinoni, and the Beinoni's neshama is coming down to be mislabesh, to be enclosed, to be interactive with the nefesh habamis. In other words, like this. There's actually two, we have a nefesh lakis and nefesh habamis. We have two voices, we have two views, points of view in our existence, in our journey. And our job is to subjugate, is to win the war. The nefesh lakis should always be the boss. Yeah? And that's an amazing thing. That's iskafi, explained that before. But for that to happen, the nefesh elokis could have come down differently. There's this key word that he used, lehislabesh, to actually unite with the nefesh habamis. It's like a piece of clothing that you put on. There's a piece of clothing on the table. There's a piece of clothing that I'm actually putting it on, right? The nefesh elokis is not just here. The nefesh elokis is wearing the nefesh elokis, the wearing the nefesh habamis. In fact, when the Nefesh HaLakis comes down to this world, it can only express itself through the Nefesh HaBamis. Even when we have everything we do, every mitzvah we do, every thought that we have, even good thoughts, might originate Nefesh HaLakis, but it's talking through the Nefesh HaBamis. That's all we are. That's our life, right? Like you don't have different thoughts in your head coming from different places. You only have one thought. Sometimes it's the Nefesh HaLakis communicating through your thought, right? You know what I'm saying? Now, if it was just about winning the war, we didn't need that process. It could have been separate. Nefesh HaLakis could have come down. Nefesh HaBamis could have fought with each other. But as two separate entities. I'm not sure in practice what it would look like because we're not created that way. I don't know how we turn on how the two thoughts would wage war with each other, right? But it could have been. Hashem could do everything. It could have, in other words, If the purpose is not to change fundamentally the Nefesh HaBamis, just to win the war, the Nefesh HaLakis didn't have to be that bound up with the Nefesh HaBamis. That's his question here. I know there's a war to be won, and the war, winning the war is very, very special. Right? In other words, just picture, I'm trying to give an analogy for this. Picture that you want to do something, there's two people in the room, and they're both screaming a different opinion, right? And you make a decision to listen to one over the other. In other words, the opposing opinion has nothing to do with you, it's just a separate entity. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, right? Here he asks a different question. The question is not why there's a war between Nefesh HaLakis and Nefesh HaBamis, and the war is not winnable. That's not what he's asking. He's asking, if it's not winnable, then why did the Nefesh HaLakis have to come down and interact, become one with, being clothed in the Nefesh HaLakis? Right? You could have achieved winning the war without that aspect. Which therefore means you must say, and this is what's going to come out later, that on some level the Benyani does make a dent in the Nefesh HaBamis. It is true, we'll always have the war, but you can't say that the Benyani never has an effect on the Nefesh HaBamis. Because if that was the case, there'd be absolutely no point, not in the Nefesh HaBamis coming down, but in the hislabish part, in the enclosing part. That we must say, because the Nefesh HaLakis came down and was mislabish, as he says, he interacts and is enclosed in Nefesh HaBamis to the point that almost inseparable, you must say that some dent will be made, some change must be made. You must be able to affect the Nefesh HaBamis at some stage. And that's why he asks the question, he says, why does it come down? And he says, and therefore, Usihi zois nechamosam. And therefore, the only comfort that we can have, the nachman to the Benini, the nachman bikiflaim to Shia, to comfort us in a sort of a double, a very strong way, to sameach liban b'Hashem, is to be happy to make our hearts happy with Hashem. Hashoichein itom b'soich teirasim avidosam. The fact is that when the Benini does mitzvahs, as we'll soon see, the full answer will come later, but he brings elokus, he brings godliness into his being. And because his Nefesh HaBamis is so one with Nefesh HaLakis, it's going to have an effect. Right? On some level. Okay, which we'll talk about later. Okay. It says now. Good. Who? This idea that we actually do bring Hashem into our body, and we do have an effect on Nefesh HaBamis, by bringing elokus, it's not just that we don't listen to the Nefesh HaBamis. We actually at some level do make a change by bringing the Shekhinah, by bringing the divine light into the Nefesh HaBamis as well. Let's understand how this works. Understand how it works in the following way. It says like this. V'hu b'hakdim. This is by prefacing Loshin HaYunuka. He quotes a Zohar, and the Zohar says that there was someone called Yanuka. Yanuka means a young child. This happened to be the son of Rav Habanunu Sova, I think. Give me one second. Just one second. Let me just have a look here in the first here. You can look, it's the same. He's about to quote the Zohar, right? And it's interesting. The Alter Rebbe doesn't always do that. I mean, the Zohar has different authors. It's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, of course, but it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai quoting different people or different things. Different people say in the Zohar different things, and Alter Rebbe never does this. He doesn't say who the person that's. He says, the normal expression that is used not only in Tanya but in many Sforim is you want to quote the Zohar. You say Ukamoy Shekasa B'Zohar, like it's written in the Zohar. Not exactly who said it in the Zohar and all that, right? But here it says it was Yanuka, which was the son of Rabbi Hamanunu Sova, right? Okay, so I'm gonna leave this for a second. Let's learn what he says first. I'll come back and I'll tell you why he does it over here. Okay. So he says like this: the expression of the Yanuka, the young child, and this is B'Zohar Parshas Bullock, Al Pasuk, and it comments. The Zohar is commenting on the Pasuk. There's a pasuk in Koheles that Shlomo HaMelech said, "Hechacham einav beroishay." The chacham, the wise person, his eyes is on his head. Right. So the Zohar says, the Yanuka said, "V'chiba on asar eina de barnash." Well, where else is the eyes going to be? I mean, yeah, the eyes are in the head, right? Now, there is a very simple idea of this pasuk that we learn in the Sportan and Gemara. Oops, Sportan and Gemara in Talmud and other places. That who's a chacham, who's a wise person? We say, chacham eino b'roshe, his eyes on his head, which means he sees further, he looks at the consequence. Right? Okay, that's one way to explain this pasuk. Obviously, we're not talking about where the eyes are physically. Everyone knows where the eyes are physically, right? But it's not a complete answer, because then it could have said, ha chacham, the wise person, eino b'soifoi. The eyes are on the end. In other words, he looks further to see what the consequence, what the end result will be. In other words, this is the idea, because we do this, we have, And we have this other, we have it in many expressions. We say, Eizu chacham, who's a chacham, aroya sanoilal, who'll see the, what will be born out of what I'm doing there. In other words, he sees the result, right? But it's still not 100% clear how that fits into the words, Einov Berosha, his eyes in his head. I should say, eyes on the result, on the consequence, on the end, right? Okay. As he says, Ella. So the Zohar says the following. It's all Aramaic words, of course, because the Zohar is written in Aramaic. Ella kra hochi hu vadai. But he says the explanation of the pasuk is this. Definitely this, he says. It's none because we have learnt from our sages, lo yehei bar nash bekiluya dereisha, that a person should not walk around without a yarmulke, right, with his head uncovered. Arba amos, 4 cubits. By the way, the yarmulke is a big thing at Pialocha. It's a big discussion where it comes from and how obligatory it is. I mean, it is today, it's a halacha, you have to wear a yarmulke. But anyway, it has a lot of discussion. Why? What's the source of it? Is it true that it always in history they always wore yarmulkes? Like, not necessarily, they could have only worn it when they davened or learned. Or, anyway, it's a big discussion. Today, it's definitely halachic, you have to wear, but that's, you know, that's interesting. Okay, but Avihai and Zohar says the following. We learned that a person should never walk 4 amas, 4 cubits without, why? My time, what's the reason? Because the shchinta sharia al reshe. Because the shchina, the divine presence, is resting on your head, right? And therefore, you always have to be conscious of it. Therefore, the chol chacham, therefore, any wise person, a nayu umilui, his eyes and his speech and his consciousness, bereisha inun, is in the head, which means not the physical place where the eyes are, which means his thoughts, his focus, his attention is always on what is on the head. That's what it means. Hachachav einav, the wise person, where does he look? Where does he focus? Bereishai, on what is on his head, which is the shchina. Bahu the shariyo of the kaimal reshe. Right? What is resting and what is existing on top of his head. Yeah. So he says, what does that mean? And he continues. V'chad einoy taman. It's all in Aramaic again, right? And when the eyes of the chacham is focused on what's on top of his head, linda, he needs to know da'ahu nohoiro da'adlik al reisha, that this fire, this light, this fire, he says, this candle, the adlik al reisha, that is burning on top of his head, which is the symbolism for the shechina, itzrich lemishcha, needs oil to burn. Needs oil. Why? Begin the guf of the barnash iu psila, because the guf, the body of the person, is the wick. Unahoira adlik leila, and the candle is burning on top of his head. So we are the wick, and the shchina, the divine presence, is the fire burning on top of our heads. Right? Now, what does a wick need to make sure a fire burns? Oil. Shlomo Malko Tzavach Va'omar. Shlomo HaMelech screams in Kohelet, and he says, V'shemen al roishcha al yechsar. Do not leave oil lacking from your head. In other words, that's what it means. Now, according to this pshat, you have to put oil to make sure that the flame is continuing to burn. Donahoira the bereisha, because that light, says the Zohar, that is burning on top of your head, itzrich lemishka, to be there, to continue there, to be staying there, needs oil. Yeah. Oh, now we'll see what the oil is. One second. Let's just talk about a wick and an oil for a second, right? I listened to the shiur last week from Rabbi Yoel. He has phone shiur. He explains beautifully. Why can't a wick maintain the fire? So I don't know exactly physiologically, but and scientifically, but the way Chassidus explains is as follows: You have in the world, you have substances that are coarse, substances that are more refined. Fire is kind of the most refined existence, like not tangible. It's almost the closest we have to spirituality, almost, right? A wick is a coarse piece of material. That's what it is. So therefore, the wick grabbing onto the fire will just consume it. It's not going to actually be able to sustain its burning. So what do? You put oil. What's oil? Oil is a much more refined substance than the wick. Yeah? So when the wick is full of oil, the wick is still a core substance, but when it has oil, the oil touches the fire. The fire won't happen for the oil either, but it will happen to be a physical fire. It'll burn when it interacts with the wick. Now, you know that we have this in a physical wick, but the same thing as the neshama, actually. We have when the neshama connects with the body, basically. In other words, when there's the wick burning, right? When you light a fire and with the wick, like a candle or something, you'll notice there's two levels of fire. There's the darker fire, which is right by the wick, and there's the pure fire, which is on top, right? Because the darker fire is still wrestling with the wick, so it's still interacting with something, a core substance. Through the oil, it's able at least to burn, but it's a darker fire. It starts to reveal. Eventually, it turns into a beautiful fire. Okay. So now we have the same thing with the person. The body of the person, the goof of the person, the nefshabamis of the person, whatever the case is, even the nefshalakis of a person is like a wick. It's coarse. It's not gonna latch on to the shechina, to the divine presence, to Hashem that's on top of your head. So what do you need to do? You need to bring a fine substance like oil, right? So if we didn't know what we're about to learn, and we didn't have an inkling of where the direction Tanya is going, we would think that would be something much more spiritual, what's more refined, which is Torah learning, tefillah. Those are the more refined parts of the human experience. Says the Zohar, no. Says the Zohar, the inun, and what is the oil? Shlomo HaMelech says, don't go cheap on the oil. What is the oil? Uvdon tovon, good deeds. That's it, mitzvahs. Right? Valdo. And that's what the Yanuka now concludes, and he says, Valdo. And it's this, on this, that the Pasuk says, that Shlomo HaMelech says, HaChacham Eino Beroshei, that the wise person is always focused on what is on his head, which is the Shechina, right? And it's the yarmulke that sort of reminds us to do that. And the on the Shechina, which is, then what does it mean the Shechina? The Shechina is the fire, the candle. You are the wick, and therefore you're always focused on what's going to make the fire burn. And that is oil, and that oil is mitzvahs. Yeah? Now, why did he quote who said this? So the Rebbe explained like this. Let me just have a look here. Because when we find in Gemara, even, but certainly in Zohar, when the Tanoim said things, often it had to do, their viewpoint to what they were saying, often had to do with the source of their neshama, right? For example, we know that Shammai, his neshama came from Gevura, and therefore, typically, Shammai is more strict. Hillel, his neshama came from Chesed, so he's less strict, right? Okay. We also find sometimes that the name of someone that says something has to do with what he's saying, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So here he doesn't say his name. In fact, I don't even know what his name was. He just calls him a Yanuka, and that's what the Zohar calls him. Yanuka, young child, right? And he was referred to as the Yanuka. Why? Because at that point, when he was a child, he was connected with this madrega of being a young person, right? And it's dafka at that state that he had the revelation of the importance of doing mitzvahs. Why? So he explains like this. The Rebbe explains like this. That the whole idea is about the Shechina resting upon the body, right? And what is it through? The counterintuitive thing that we explain here, the Zohar explains, it's not through what we think it would be, spiritual experiences, more refined experiences like Torah and Tefillah. No, it's dafka through Maisa, right? And the truth is, when it comes to the Shechina that dress on a person, there's no difference between a person who's a very high madrega or a person who's just beginning out, right? They're all equal. When it comes to action, everyone's equal. My tefillin and Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillin is the same tefillin, right? The kavanah is different, the spirituality is different, the madrega is different, but the mitzvah is the same. No difference between your mezuzah and the biggest tzaddik's mezuzah. Right? Sorry? Okay, so we obviously there's a room for there's a role of spirituality and a role for kavana and a role of madrig. Otherwise, what's the point of this is the whole story with Korach, right? Korach said, "Well, if action is the most important thing, what do we need tzaddikim for?" No, it's a huge difference, but not in this fact of it being a mitzvah that causes hashras hashchina, that causes the shchina to remain on you and to connect with your body. And that aspect is through mitzvahs, and mitzvahs is everything. Mitzvahs, first of all, seems to be the least of the of it's the lower down the ladder. So then Torah and Tefillah, and also it's shaykh to everyone. Everyone can do it, right? Sorry? Yeah. Obviously, yeah. He's going to explain why later, but...
Oh, okay.
Right? And that's why this idea has nothing to do with the tzaddik. Right? This is an amazing thing. This has got to do with every single yid. Keep your eyes on what's on your head. Understand there's a flame there, the shechina. You need oil. You, the wick, you need oil. Do a mitzvah. That's it. Right? Yeah. Now, again, I mean, we run an organization called Bina, which is about Torah learning, right? No one's taking away the first, you can't do proper mitzvah, right? Yeah, but I mean, of course. But at the end of the day, the mitzvah, whether with Torah learning, without Torah learning, the mitzvah is the mitzvah, right? That was the Rebbe's campaign about mitzvahs, right? That was like, right? That through a mitzvah, you have this amazing connection with Hashem. Everything has a different role, of course. Depends what we're learning. It depends what we're talking about. But and that's why it's the Yanuka. That's why the Alter Rebbe says the Yanuka. Dafka, the person who was at the beginning of his journey. You don't need to be in a high madrega for this. You don't need to be advanced in your years or in your madrega and your level of Torah mitzvahs. The Yanuka. The Yanuka says, I'm just at the beginning. I'm a child. But I'm telling you, the most important thing is the thing that I can do, same as a big tzaddik and a very old tzaddik, because it's a mitzvah. That's why he quotes the Yanuka. Okay. What's that? Yeah. Okay, that's even accidental mitzvah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole discussion about it. It's a mitzvah. Even like in halacha, there's a whole discussion whether you have to have kavana to do a mitzvah or not. I mean, even according to the opinions, and we pass like that, especially when it comes to mitzvahs which are biblical, we say that you have to have kavana, but a very basic kavana. You just have to be intending to do the mitzvah. That's it. One of the exceptions is tzedakah. Tzedakah says you get a mitzvah even if you didn't intend to do it. Right? Okay.
But generally, you have to
have intention. Intention is to do the mitzvah. In other words, if you walk past a shul and they blow the shofar Rosh Hashanah, you just hear the tune, you never even thought about doing the mitzvah, you don't automatically do the mitzvah. Although there is a view that you do. But the halacha is you don't. You have to actually, but it's not, we don't have to have, we're not talking about tremendous kavana here of knowing what's happening in all the spiritual kabbalistic worlds when you blow a shofar. It's just kavana to have the mitzvah, to do the mitzvah. And the guy blowing the shofar has to have in mind that whoever hears it is doing the mitzvah. That he's covering us and we're being yotzei from him, and that's it. I mean, that's all that's needed, really. Now, obviously, the mitzvah is a brighter mitzvah and a greater mitzvah and a deeper mitzvah if you have kavana, if we learn, of course. But nevertheless, the basic idea, what is the oil? The oil is the mitzvah. That's it. Right? And he says, V'hinei, biur moshel zeh, the explanation of this moshel, shehimshil hayunuke, himshil oy rashkin alayraner, that the shkin is compared to the fire of the candle. She'ein a mer that will not shine. V'ne'e chazapsila will not take hold on the wick. B'li shemen, without oil. V'chach, and also what the Zohar says, le'ein ha'shchila, shchino shorol gufo adam. And therefore the shchino will not rest on the body of the person. She'nimshol le'psila, that is compared to the wick. Ela al yedei maisim toivim dafka, only through mitzvahs. Is a big chiddush. Why is the chiddush? Because one would imagine we have in ourselves the oil already. What's the oil? The neshama itself should be enough. Don't forget, we have a nefesh elokis, right? We're talking about bringing the shechinah into our body. We need oil for the wick. The body is a coarse wick. That's what it is, right? We want to bring the shechinah into it. Why do we need a mitzvah? Why mitzvah? Why isn't the neshama itself an oil? What's the neshama? She chelek eloka mimal. Neshama is a piece of God. We said that, right? It's a godly infusion. Mamash, right. At the beginning, he doesn't bring mamash here. Yeah. Right? Leo Asik Hashem al-Psila. So why can't that be the oil for the week? Mavur umuvan l'chol maskil. It's understandable to anyone who thinks about it. Why? Now, we're just going to learn now the point, but then we'll have to develop it next week. Kehinei. Nishma sa'odam. This is an interesting thing. Okay, let me just explain before I say this. You have to understand when the neshama comes down. Yes, we say the neshama is a chelek el kam mimal, it's part of Hashem. Hashem blew into it, not spoke it, all that kind of stuff, right? But in order for the neshama, especially the neshama that comes into the body, to come down, it still went through a very, very big evolution, right? Not the same as the rest of the world, but it's left, because in other words, even when it comes down here, at the end of the day, its essence is still godly. But in order to come in, it has its own identity, right? Like, we're not God just because we have a neshama. We have a neshama that's godly, right? Yes, chelek l'kamim mamash, but the neshama is a metzias. The neshama is something. It exists, even a great neshama. In order to come down here, it has to go through a process of tzimtzum. It has to go through different worlds. It has to, differently to the rest of the world. It still retains its godliness, but it's still in existence. Gehinei nishma sa'odah, the neshama of a person. Afilu tzadik gomri, a perfect tzadik. Even a tzadik in the bain, even a perfect tzadik. Oyved Hashem, that serves Hashem b'yira, with fear, v'avo, and love. But tanugim, he has the highest level of love. What's the highest level of love? Tanugim. Tanugim means when it's called like a pleasure, the love of pleasure. What's the love of pleasure? The Tanya later on explains different types of love for Hashem. There's a fiery love, and there's like a passionate love, and then there's a calm love. It's called the love of pleasure. What does that mean? That you're so one with Hashem, you don't even get excited. In other words, it's just who I am. Like, just this is why I bask in the glory of Hashem, just because that's natural to me. When someone has a love out of fire, it actually means it needs work. It's still with work, right? Right? It's not an intrinsic essential love. Right? Okay? So even a tzaddik at that level, at the end of the day, afal pikein eino betela b'metzius legamri. That tzaddik is not completely bottled to Hashem. Because the tzaddik still exists. At the end of the day, it's in existence. Even at the highest level. Li botel, li kolel, is not completely bottled, or to become completely one, b'oir Hashem mamash. You cannot say even about the greatest tzaddik that he's completely one with Hashem, because he's in existence, even his neshama is in existence. Rak, who dobber with the atzma, he's in a separate existence. The only thing is, he's in existence that fears Hashem, yirei Hashem v'oyavo. He loves Hashem, he fears Hashem, but it's still even at the highest madrega, he is loving Hashem, he is fearing Hashem, right? Now, it needs to be understood this, because we do say elsewhere in Chassidus that a person who is the biggest tzaddik, like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said he was so one with Hashem that he's like just a symbol, he's a code name for Hashem almost, right? So it doesn't mean that a tzaddik sees himself as something separate from Hashem. A tzaddik didn't just learn what we learned in Tanya about the oneness of Hashem, he internalizes it, right? And he really feels that he's completely one with Hashem, right? But at the end of the day, what Al-Tabba means is, at the end of the day, he still has his own feelings. He knows and he's conscious and he feels that those feelings are just an extension of Hashem, but they're still his independent feelings. It's not completely pure bittul. I mean, we should only know. I don't know what this means even, but we can understand the words at least, right? Maybe we'll elaborate more next week, but what Alter was going to say like this, that's the way he is. However, that's why it's good enough to be Shaman. Shaman can only come through a mitzvah. Because what he's going to explain is that when you do a mitzvah, you're connecting to the pnimiyus haratzon of Hashem. The mitzvah is Hashem expressing himself in the mitzvah. Even the neshama at its highest level, with the tzaddik at its highest level, you can't say it's completely inseparable from Hashem, because they have independent feelings. A mitzvah is one with Hashem. We'll develop why next week. But you're not here next week, are you? That's not good. I mean, it goes on for a while. I mean, we'll no, but it's we won't have time to start that. And that's the power of mitzvah we're going to see, and that's why mitzvah is everything. Well, generally, Chassidus says mitzvah is this. So we'll see, there's rotzen. The mitzvah is the will of Hashem, right? Yeah. Just even ourselves, what's the will? The will is an expression of us. But even us, We once learned this. There's a difference between pnimiya saratzen and chitzoni saratzen. Sometimes you want something, but it's because it's to achieve something else, right? You want to work, not because your whole being is about working, because you want to live, so you need to work, right? Yeah, of course you want to work, but that's the external ratzen. Pnimiya saratzen means what you really want. What you really want, and ratzen is, even by person, the very deep wills that we have, the very deep desires that we have. It's not because we want it for something, we want it because that's an expression of who we are. And that's kind of what a mitzvah is, and that's why it's the greatest connection to Hashem. So, but to be continued. You're learning about the Ratzon Hashem. Yeah, but there's... So mitzvahs and Torah, each one has what other one doesn't have. But in terms of this discussion, mitzvah in a way is higher than Torah. Torah kind of reveals what the mitzvah is. Yeah, because as we learned in the beginning of Tanya, the mitzvah in a way is higher than Torah, but the mitzvah is only makif. In other words, internalizing it is really through Torah. But they work together, obviously. But we'll go into all of that. That's